It's June 12th, 1998, and this talk is being presented by Lillian Van Voorhis, and the title of the talk is Living a Conscious Life. That's a little bell. Okay. I want to preface my remarks with the fact that probably you will hear me referencing Jesus tonight. He is one of the teachers that really accelerated my own growth, I feel. But what I want to say is that if I refer to God or nature or the Great Spirit, anything like that, I think of all life as one. And so what you name it really doesn't matter a lot to me, but it's very important to some people. So anything that I say that seems uncomfortable to you, translate it into your own terms, you know, that makes you feel comfortable. That's what's most important. And if anybody needs, usually once I get going, I don't take a break. So if anybody needs a drink or bathroom, please feel free to get up. You're not going to disturb me. I'll be okay with it. And at the end of this presentation, I want to take us through a little guided reverie or meditation. So we'll be doing that. And Gail also asked if I would kind of go around the room maybe and do like what we did last time to see who's with everyone or what I happen to see tonight. So if it doesn't get too late, I'll play with that too. That'd be fun if people are open to doing that. And you can tell me if you're not, you know, that'd be okay. Okay. One ringy dingy. Oh, good, we have a telephone man. Okay. So I want to share with you some ideas that have kind of come through for me about what it means to live consciously at this point in time, you know, the end of our decade, the end of a century, the end of many other major cycles. It's probably, in my thinking, one of the most important times that we've ever experienced on the planet. And finally, I can understand why I'm alive at this point. When I was much younger, there were many times in my life when I just felt like I had come in too early. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, what a mistake, and on and on. And I no longer feel that way. It's very gratifying to work with people who are awakening or who've had very significant dreams or events in their life and not understanding what this all means, and just to be able to help them to understand that they're not crazy. They will fit in. They can have a normal life. You know, they can be a regular person, that kind of thing. So it's really close to my heart to talk about these kinds of things. And what I sense is really happening right now, I think, is what has happened for hundreds of years in the past. Every time we come to the end of a major cycle, there is a great, I feel, you can think of it as a downpouring of spirit, or an upwelling from within the heart of humanity to move forward, to make progress, to take the next step, whatever that is for us. And I think we're in an extremely accelerated period right now. I was just talking with Ellen about that, and I know you must all be feeling in your own lives the impact of the great energies that are moving. And from my way of thinking, the great urgency of spirit asking us, you know, you're at this point now. In consciousness, you can remember, you can take the next step and move forward. And for each one of us who says yes to that and really does that in our lives, it impacts everything else. I really believe that all life is one, and I do mean humanity as well as plants, animals, and minerals. It's all one. We are all united, and we're in process of remembering that. And the more of us that do that remembering work, the more we will induct others into that. And we can do that work right where we live. You don't have to go to a distant place, you know, to become awakened or enlightened. We're in that process right now. That's great. I think one of the points that's really important to me is that we're in process of kind of shifting our consciousness from that separated personality, ego consciousness, into that unified state where the whole brain is going to awaken, not just part of each hemisphere, but they are going to unify and act as one unit. It's so nice to see people going, yes, yes. that's really what I believe is part of what is happening at this point. And the intellect will begin to take its proper place as our servant rather than our taskmaster, which in this century has really been the focus of our science and technology. We have wonderful things that we've created through this great servant that we have, but we've really allowed that to kind of overwhelm life. And I think you can think of our country and the values that we used to espouse, and many of us still espouse, but much of that is kind of pushed aside in favor of what science and technology has brought us. Wonderful tools, yes, but a lot of distractions as well, and we've lost the ability to become quiet or to understand how to be still at all anymore. So those of us who are awake, even in the least, can choose to be honest, caring, compassionate, heartfelt people right where we are in our daily lives or our workplaces or in public in our relationships, that kind of thing. One of the notes that I made is that this is really a time to be accountable to ourselves as a people and as individuals, to recognize that it's time to quit asking our government or our creations or other people or anything else to take responsibility for what we can take responsibility for in our own lives. We need to stand on our own two feet. That's part of maturing, and that's part of the awakening spirit that's happening within each of us. And we have to remember that we are first spiritual beings. That's the truth about us. We're spiritual beings living through this physical body as this personality. Myself, Lillian, you know, I am that personality. But beyond that, I am a great spiritual being. My soul is vast, and my spirit is much larger than this body. And when you begin to recognize that, you know that there is nothing that comes to you in your life through which you cannot pass, nothing that's too difficult, or nothing that you cannot create in your life. The intellect is the part of us that says it's not possible. It's too hard, it costs too much money, it takes too much time. You know, you have to do this, this, and this. It's a fabulous taskmaster. So the real work that we're about right now, I think, part of the real work, is remembering that part of ourself and bringing it softly and gently into our hearts where it can serve us. And when I sat down to put this talk together, my intellect immediately jumped up and down and said, you can't talk about this stuff. Nobody's going to understand you. You don't know enough about it. It'll take too much time. You only have a week, 4 weeks left, something like that. You should have mailed that flyer, you know, on and on and on. It just wouldn't let up. And I finally had to say, you know, get behind me, leave me alone, and just sit and sit. And Bert has seen me go through this process. I had to just escape last week, and I ran over to the ocean. And it's such a clarifying, great, wondrous body to sit in front of. And I was able to become peaceful with this and recognize that, yes, I could do this. And I wrote a lot while I was over there. So that's one example that's real current in my life about how that part of us really is so used to being in control. And it's really the heart that we need to expand at this point in time. We're really going to need this... if all of the earth changes begin to occur, which so many are talking about, many of us are dreaming about these things. I have people calling me quite a lot about the sometimes for them very frightening experiences that they're having in the dream state. And I think what's really happening is that a lot of us are tapping in on some probable realities. But we are powerful beings. We have the ability to do some work now to bless these places, like Popocatépetl in Mexico, in the state of, I've forgotten what the state is, but down in Mexico, like Montserrat in the Philippines, like the Great Fault that runs in this state, and all over the world. There are many things that we can do energetically in a conscious way that can help the planet. She's expanding and changing just like we are. You know, she's a living, sentient being. So, like I mentioned last time when I was here, we label nature as being disastrous. That's our perception. Nature is creative and wondrous in her works. and we just have to change our perception. She's also very responsive to those who live on her in a responsible manner, in a way that honors her and doesn't harm her. So in a very small way in your own homes, if you are recycling, you know, if you're using water responsibly, if you're composting. My husband just bought me a composter. I've had my little piles out in the yard, but now I've got this thing, you know, so I can really do it big time. There are so many things. If you're raising any of your own food, or if you create a yard that is peaceful, people come in all the time to our home and say, I always feel so good here. You know, it feels calm, it feels peaceful. That's because of the energy that we've put into place through the work we've done, and the blessings that we did on our property before we built. I guess I was more involved in that, huh, Bert, than anything. But that's just one way of being conscious right where you live. I did some work where I greeted the nature spirits, because I'm very connected to that part. And gosh, we have some incredible trees, and we have a fern that is literally a tree fern. It's a good 16 feet tall now. And you're not supposed to be able to grow those things in the valley. Well, it wanted to be a tree, so I said it could, you know, that kind of thing. In fact, we have to decide what to do now. It's way up at the top. But anyway, it's just like magic when you begin to play with these things right where you live. If you are conscious, everything else responds to that. Love is the great healer. Love is the great, I think, gift of creativity that we have. That's kind of a deep secret. There's a wonderful, I think it's a Hopi story that talks about the truth about what humanity is and how they had to figure out, Coyote and some of the others had to figure out where to put this, because humanity just wasn't ready, you know, and they had to be sure that humanity might find it sometime in the future, but not until it was ready or something like that. And they tried all these different places, and humanity always figured out where it was. So finally said, I know. Great Spirit said, we'll put it inside him and her. And then when the time is right and they're really ready to awaken, they will remember, you know. And so we really are in the process of remembering that all life is one, that we are unlimited, vast beings, and that we're all connected. We're all brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, grandfathers and grandmothers. That's the way I like to look at people. And when you begin to have that attitude in your life, you can interact so much differently with people at work that just irritate the heck out of you, you know. Or people, one thing I really don't like is when I'm in the grocery store shopping, or we might be at a restaurant or something, the cellular phone. That's a wonderful invention, but I really don't like the way it intrudes in so many places. There's no stillness, there's no privacy, no intimacy. Even when you're in a restaurant, the phone rings. Or we went to Riverdance not too long ago. Somebody's cellular phone rang, luckily before the concert started, you know, and they did say, oh, we got to remember to turn that off. And I said, why? I was thinking, why do you even bring that? What is your life, you know, if you have to have your cellular phone attached to your hip all the time? Something, I don't know, that's a judgment in my part, but I really don't like that. Oh gosh. So there's a lot of things that our intellect has created, like the computer, which is a fabulous servant, fax machines, I've mentioned the cellular phone, answering machines. The one I really don't like is call waiting. That was like overkill on the intellect's part, I think. The phone rings enough, let alone having call waiting. And if you just think about your daily life, how much sound is bombarding you all the time and how much imagery is coming in. For myself, sometimes I'm so overloaded. I'm so sensitive anyway, seeing and hearing everything. I just can't imagine having all those additional things. I do love my computer. That's a wonderful servant. But it's hard for me to understand how people find 4 to 6 hours extra a day to be on the internet or all the other things like that. I need to survive in this world consciously and really remember what the truth is about myself. I need blocks of quiet time. I need time for prayer time or to think about my dreams. for meditation. So I think that's a great secret that we've kind of given away. And the more that you plug those things into your life, the greater peace comes naturally, the greater awareness you have about what's appropriate to say to other people or how to interact with them. It all becomes a really nice circle if you begin to nurture yourself. And you have so much access to your own inner awareness, your own inner guidance, once you begin to do those things regularly. One thing that came to me very strongly in meditation was that if we as a people, I mean the whole planet, if you look at all the nations that are developing, what are they wanting to do? They want to be just like us. They want those fax machines, those cellular phones, the two-car home or whatever. You know, it's very much developing in the same kind of path as these nations begin to have their own ability to create these things anew. And I just lost my train of thought here. I guess what I want to say is that our attention is so fragmented by all these things that call to us. And if you think about this going on forever in your life, there's a point that you get to which tells you you'll never be fulfilled, you'll never have enough, there'll never be that meaning that you were looking for. It's not about acquiring things. It's not about being rational, intellectual beings. I think it's about being relational beings, caring for one another, you know, caring for our planet, the animals, the forests, and all the rest of us as well. I think that's a key point. And our rational mind can't understand that at all. It's your heart that can understand and grasp that. Oh, one thing else that came to me that I think I may have heard this too from Carolyn Mace. I really like some of the work that she's doing right now. How many of you know about her? Yeah, she's so to the point and so direct and so clear. And for some people that's very off-putting, but I really like her honesty and her directness. I'm pretty sure this came from her. What's happening for us is that as this awakening process continues, we're really moving from Homo sapiens to Homo noeticus. And what that means is we're moving from a sentient being who has five senses that we use every day to a being that's going to have an awakened heart and an inner awareness where you can easily access your spiritual connection, you know, that awareness that all life is connected and that what I do does impact everyone else. Whether your perception gets that or not, it's really the truth. So in the Piscean Age, we saw the development. That's the age we are just moving out of, moving into the Aquarian Age. We saw the development of fabulous technology and science. I think what's going to happen in the Aquarian Age is that you're going to see a terrific, we're already seeing it, the holistic movement is really going to come into its own and be respected. And new ways of healing and new ways of teaching, new ways of living, and new ways of being in community with one another are going to arise. That gives me such hope. I get really excited when I think about that. The healers that have been operating very quietly, you know, and secretly in a lot of places will finally have their proper place in society. And the ancient ways that we threw out are going to be reborn, will come back. They're starting to rise up now. And I just get very excited about that. So this is one of my favorite quotes from the Master Jesus. He said, "I came to give you life and to give you life more abundantly." I don't think he was talking about goods and services. I really don't. Because look it, we've got lots of that stuff, you know, and are most of us feeling really happy and satisfied? No, we're still out there gathering things, you know, and how can we get more, and the competition with each other and all that stuff. I really think that he was talking about that interconnectedness, that deeper realization that heart to heart we are one, you know, and we spring from the same source no matter what we name it. It's one and the same. So So I should say, don't mistake that I don't value the intellect. I do. I have a really strong intellect myself, but I have learned that as a young person, I think I was basically a very fearful person, and the intellect just feeds off of that. You know, it just develops it and makes it bigger and more massive, on and on and on. So I've had to learn to really teach that part of myself to calm down and be still when I need it to. It gets to be like an untrained puppy that just goes crazy on you, you know, drives you, wags me instead of the other way around, you know. And in a little bit, I want to share with you what my perception about the Garden of Eden story is, and that'll explain that a little bit more. Let's see. Oh, I just want to talk about how you can be conscious in your daily life and even the smallest things, just really briefly. How many of us every morning when you wake up are really glad to be awake and alive? How many of us wake up with a full component? Yay, Dennis. I like that. All right. Of your physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual energy really plugged in and ready to go, you know. How many of us, when we shower, are aware of the ensouling life in every drop of water that hits the body, that's giving its life to our bodies, you know, to refresh us and awaken us, to ground us? It's always so grounding for me to get in water. How many of us are even conscious when we're eating our food that something grew and was brought forward in the form that we're eating it so that we could live? How many of us do a blessing at all, you know, in our families, with our kids, if we have children, and are grateful or thankful for what the day is going to bring us, the new chances to interact with others, to learn from others, to be taught by others, to teach others. All of those things, they're very small things, but together they comprise the day, you know, and one day on top of another. So attitude has so much. A grateful heart can change everything, everything. Let's see. One thing that I think is an important awareness to think about is you can choose, it's your choices really that make up the moments of your day. And you can choose to be an angry, kind of a victim person in your life, or you can really choose to think of life as a great teacher and that you are its disciple. You can also think of that as being, when you're more into spiritual work or more esoteric, like I tend to be at times, as being that apprentice or disciple of the Master or of God, of the Great Spirit, of the Great Father, Mother, Being. That's really how I've gotten through life a lot of times. I've had so many things happen in my life that I couldn't begin to comprehend, especially with major illnesses when I was young. And I, as I got older and began to do research and think about doing this kind of work, I knew there had to be a purpose in those things. Something was teaching me. I just had to become aware of what it was. Now that I've got at least 30 years perspective, 40 years perspective, at least, no, more than that, 50. How am I? 52! I have 50 years perspective on all those things that happened to me. I can see that each of them came at a point in time when I needed that to occur because I was saying no when I needed to say yes. Illness has been such a doorway for me, a transformative teacher. It comes in such interesting forms and at such interesting times. So for me, it's always been that doorway through which I learned more. It's kind of like I'm rubbing off my really rough places, and my fear was the biggest rough spot. Learning to say yes, learning to know that I can walk on this planet and be secure and safe no matter where I am. And that doesn't mean, I'm not speaking of this as an ideal, but it's really a way you can live your life. You do have to be realistic, you know, and be aware. You can't be asleep in the way you're living your life and where you're going with your body and your mind, that kind of thing. But once you reach a certain point and you are a spiritually aware enough person, there is no place you cannot go, I don't think. I want to tell you a cute Carolyn Mace story that some of you have probably heard. she went into a little shop, I guess, to buy coffee or something one night, and she's waiting in line to get her Coke or coffee, whatever she had, and standing next to her is this young woman who is pierced up the wazoo, you know, all lined up on her ears and her nose and just all over. She's got every piercing on her face that you can think of, and she's looking at this girl, and finally she goes, "What'd you do that for?" And the girl looks at her. Doesn't that sound just like Carolyn? The girl looks at her in shock, you know, this adult person talking to her like that. And Carolyn said, "I asked you a question. What'd you do that to your body for?" And the girl really didn't know how to respond to her. So Carolyn's into talking about tribes and things like that. And this young man was with her, comes over, and he's also got piercing everywhere. He's got his lip pierced and, you know, stuff everywhere. And she says, "Oh, you're both pierced. What's this all about?" And he wasn't quite sure how to respond either. So she looks around. There's a bunch more out on the sidewalk. And it's like, "Whoa, I see your leaders out there. So I want to go talk to him and find out what this is all about." So these two kids trail out after. They're probably 14, 15, 16, you know, something like that. And she tells this kid she wants to know, "What do they do this for?" And he says, "What do you want to know for?" She says, "Because I'm an adult who wants to understand. You've got some kind of culture thing happening here." And he goes, "Well, we want to be different." And she says, "Ha, you don't look too different to me. You all look the same. You're all peers." And this conversation went on for some time, and she says, "Well, I can see there's some spiritual feeling about this." And he goes, "We're not into religion. Don't talk to us about religion." And she says, "I didn't say religion. I said spirituality. There's some deeper meaning to what you're doing here." That caught their ear. And this kid kind of questioned her about what the difference was between spirituality and religion. And he says, "Well, nobody's ever talked to us like that before." And she says, "Well, if you come to me and I teach you, you're going to want to hear what I have to say." And they kind of went, whoa, they all gathered around, you know. And she had a class, I guess, and kind of took them through some things. But this kind of awareness, this is a woman who's incredibly grounded. She knows why she's here. She's doing her work. And it doesn't matter what you say to her. And I was at a conference in December with my sister-in-law in the Bay Area. And she took a lot of flack from some people in the audience who thought she shouldn't be saying this about this group and she shouldn't be saying. She's very opposed to this being in recovery groups for years and years and years instead of taking responsibility finally and getting on with your life. And people didn't like that at all. But she really nailed them. And it was just a real interesting time. It was so refreshing to have somebody who knew who they were, who could hear clearly what anybody was saying and then just give it right back. No, you know, waffling at all. Just very much clarity. So her work is really about awakening those people who kind of are stuck in these certain areas in their lives, and of teaching us that you can be honest and forthright and you don't have to be ashamed of that at all. If you know who you are, honesty is part of your character naturally, and you don't have to take flack for that sort of thing. It was a wonderful experience anyway. There's so many gifts that life brings to us. There's so many teachers that are out there. No matter where we are, whether we're poverty-stricken or very wealthy, whether we have very creative gifts or very intellectual gifts, whatever you've brought with you and whatever the world or life presents you to induct you deeper into your process of personal growth, they're all there for a reason. And I really believe part of taking responsibility is to realize that we chose where we found ourselves. And we've chosen right where we are in our lives is the result of all the choices we've made up to that point. And we're there for a reason, you know. So the trick is kind of to discover what your purpose is and how to live that and live it well. Saint Teresa, the little French saint who's been kind of one of my heroes since I was a little girl, always said, always prayed, "Please help me to do the small things well." She wasn't very healthy, apparently, in her physical body. and often felt that she wouldn't be able to do anything great in her life. So she was determined to do the best she could. With her stitches, she prayed with every stitch. And it's a remarkable story to read about her life. And I think that's a great secret, that no matter where we are, we often look outside of ourselves into the rest of the world, or we compare ourselves with others and think that the other is doing so much more than we. And what we have to share or offer or accomplish in our life is just absolutely as important as anyone else. So that's really important to remember that for ourselves.